That's right. When you don't know what to do, just keep on breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles and from the Big Apple in New York City, welcome to all of my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver at caregiverdave.com, along with my lovely co-host, Adrienne Gruberg at thecaregiverspace.org. And we are also coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on numerous syndicated radio and podcast networks on 26 global audio and video platforms, including iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher, Blog Talk, Radio, Castbox, Mixcloud, and I'm not going to bore you with the rest because there's a lot of them. But in fact, we are proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast of the top 50 on Player FM, number two on FeedSpot out of the top 60, number two on Caregiver on CaringVillage.com. And we have an especially exciting show planned for you today. But before we get started, I do want to thank my last week's guests, Janet Borgensen and Jonathan Schroeder, finding fun and connection with vintage vinyl records. That was a fun show, wasn't it, Adrian?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And you can listen to that guest and that show and all our shows on caregiverdave.com or on any of the other platforms that I mentioned earlier. All right, enough of that. Okay, Bob, welcome to the show. And we're so excited to have you on the Caregiver Dave show.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I always like to ask my guests just who is Bob Krulish and why was he placed on this earth?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Who is Bob Krulish? Well, right now, Bob Krulish is a father of four, grandfather of about to be six.
Oh,
I have lived my life in an interesting way. I was not diagnosed properly when I was 16 years old and started to show signs of having bipolar disorder. But I finally got diagnosed a mere 35 years later at the age of 51, after going 35 years untreated and undiagnosed. And that caused a lot of color in my life, a lot of texture, let me tell you. There were a lot of ups and downs and trials and tribulations from that. And now in the last decade or so, I've been properly diagnosed and treated. And I live very, very well, well-medicated, well-therapized. Is that a word, therapized?
Yeah.
After about 800 hours of therapy, I think I can make up my own word about that. And now I successfully coach primarily parents on how to communicate effectively with their ill loved one with a mental illness, on how to help them to find the treatment and to live a better life. So my life is all about helping other people transform theirs.
So you are bipolar.
I am. I have bipolar disorder. I have bipolar, to be more specific, type 1 with psychosis, just to add a little flavor to it.
You know, I have to laugh, Bob, because somehow I screwed up and I gave your questions to the other guest. And I kept asking him these questions that you had given me. And he wasn't answering them. And he was saying, well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that one. I see what happened now. He had no idea what I was talking about. I was telling Adrian, what a terrible guess. He didn't answer any of the questions. I better go back and do that interview over.
I want to talk to him again.
Chalk one up to the books, huh, Adrian?
But I told you that you did that at the beginning
of the
show.
Yeah, now it makes sense. All right. So you're actually coaching caregivers, aren't you? How did that start and how did that happen?
Well, it started because I eventually decided to reach out to an organization called National Alliance on Mental Illness and go to one of their connection meetings. It's meetings of other people like myself or other caregivers that are dealing with somebody themselves or a loved one with a mental illness. And after attending that for a couple of years, I heard about this In Our Own Voice program, the speaker program. And I thought, man, that'd be pretty cool if I could get to do that someday. I'd be That'd be great. Well, little did I know I got to do it right away. And now I've given about 100 talks for that program. And wow. I'm a trainer for the state of Washington on that wow. program. And wow. and what ended up happening, Dave, as you can imagine, is that as I gave talks about my well-being, my recovery, my journey, I had parents come up to me at the back of, you know, at the back of the room after the talk and said, "Can you help us?" And I'm like, "I don't think so. I'm not a coach. I just can barely get through, you know, I'm just getting through my life." Well, after hearing that enough times, I decided to build a coaching program because I found that my story and my experience really resonated with these parents and caregivers. And so I've been working with caregivers for about 4 or 5 years now, giving them advice and mm-hmm. coaching and insights on what it's like to live with a mental illness and how I can really be, how they can support their loved one.
Wow. Now, what is the definition of mental illness? I mean, it just seems like that word is thrown around a lot. You know, you talk about homeless. Oh, well, they're mentally ill. You talk about someone who, you know, a schizophrenic or, you know, hearing the hallucination or delusions and hallucinations, voices. What's your definition of mental illness?
Well, I think on a clinical level, it's, you know, it's somebody who's dealing with a psychiatric illness. Clinically, you know, there's something, in my opinion, for the most part, there are medical conditions, brain dysfunctions that are going on in the brain, too much of this, too little of that, that needs to be overcome with medication. And then in addition to that, with therapy. So they would include things like major depressive disorder, anxiety disorder, some of the serious ones like more serious ones, not that they're not all serious, but schizophrenia, bipolar disorder with psychotic features, schizoaffective disorder. All of those are what I include in mental illnesses. Mm-hmm. And they all require, in my opinion, and what my experience has brought me to believe, is some kind of clinical interaction.
Would you say that mental illness is on the rise in America and the world today? And if so, why?
Yeah.
Or are we just recognizing it better?
Well, we might be recognizing it better, although I wouldn't say that we're really great at identifying it, the average person on the street. You know, we're still not really that good at identifying truly what a mental illness might be. We throw around words like that guy's so moody, he must be bipolar. Well, moodiness and bipolar have a little bit of a connection to it, but you need to have a whole lot of symptoms before you're diagnosed with bipolar disorder, both on the manic and on a depressive scale, especially on the manic scale. So I'm not really sure we become more literate, but I can tell you what we have become is more stressed. And as the society gets more stressed, stress is one of the biggest triggers of a mental illness. It brings on symptoms, and it even triggers an illness that may have been lying dormant. Like most people, their illness will lie dormant for many years. And then, like myself, I had a serious stressful event happen when I was about 16 that triggered my bipolar disorder. And there are much more stressful events occurring in the country and in the world today. So I think stress is probably the biggest factor in why we have more of it.
Yeah, I agree. Adrian, you have a question for Bob?
Well, I guess I want to know if, I mean, I have been diagnosed because I have no thyroid as being chemically depressed. Now, the thyroid has caused the mental illnesses because of all the chemical imbalance. Do you think that there's chemical imbalances that are causing bipolar and schizophrenic disorders?
Most definitely, there are chemical imbalances. There are there's brain function. There are brain structures that are different. There's this whole idea of neurotransmitters and receptor cells bringing information from one place to the next. And sometimes I describe it as my neurotransmitter, you know, is supposed to be bringing information. It's like a quarterback that's blindfolded. Mm-hmm. And my receptor cells, they're like a wide receiver with no arms trying to catch the ball with their helmet. And so my signals are way off. And what I do with medication is it takes the blindfold off the quarterback and it puts some arms on the receiver so that information can be properly processed throughout my brain. But these are kind of illnesses that require that kind of intervention with medication.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that for me, getting treatment didn't occur to me right away. What gets in the way of somebody getting treated for mental illness, do you think?
Well, there's a couple of big reasons why people don't get treated. One is they don't want to identify themselves with a mental illness. It's mm-hmm. just too stigmatized. No problem being identified with diabetes, although that's a terrible condition as well. No problem being identified with cancer. You're actually going to get a tremendous amount of sympathy, which is appropriate. You can't get enough sympathy for that. But then you say, you know, I remember one time I was just talking to somebody. I was sitting up in first class cabin on a flight. And I was just having a nice conversation with somebody. And then all of a sudden I just mentioned, you know, that I had bipolar disorder. And it was at one of those moments when everybody in the cabin can hear me talking. and I can tell you the atmosphere changed dramatically. I mean, people were watching me, it seemed like people got to be very uncomfortable. And so I don't say that out loud on a plane anymore, nor do I say it out loud in many places, but certainly not on an airplane. So you have that going on. You have that the fact that people are very uncomfortable with it because they don't understand it. And then
they have a stereotype of their own experiences, you know, that crazy brother who just won't take his meds and
they got the crazy bipolar
and he's bouncing off the walls. And that's what they think when someone says the word. They used to call it manic depressive. You know?
Manic depressive, right, Dave? And that's exactly right. You got a brother-in-law, you got the crazy uncle, you got the guy that you used to work with that went, you know, crazy at work. He didn't take his meds. So everybody thinks that we have these radical episodes when we're really well treated. We don't have any real significant episodes whatsoever.
Why do people stop their treatments typically? And is it the majority of people who stop them?
It might be the majority of people who stop their treatment. And the reason they do is because one of the major reasons they do is because they no longer feel like they're sick. You know, they get well.
And when they're manic.
And they're manic and they get well. First, if they're manic, They love that flight they're on. That's first class right there. I mean, because when you're manic, man, you don't want to be taken off of that airplane. You're Superman. You really feel like you're invincible in every regard, and you feel very powerful, you're the smartest person that you know. Just ask me, I'll tell you. I'll even tell you the only difference between me and God when I'm manic is that he doesn't think I'm him, but I'm pretty sure, or that he's me, but I believe that I'm him. I mean, I believe I'm that powerful. And so people don't want to get off of that ride. That's really hard. And when we get medicated, we do get off of that ride and we're like, man, I'm just like a regular, ordinary person now. I don't like it. I don't like where I'm at here. So that is a big reason. The other reason I was alluding to before is our medical model suggests that you take medication until you feel better. You know, you take the cold meds until you feel better. You don't keep taking the meds after you feel better. Well, when we feel better, we quit taking our bipolar meds or schizophrenic meds or our psychiatric meds.
And are they not able to see that they're getting worse when they're not on them, or are they in a different world?
They kind of go into a different world and they have a very distorted view of the world at that point. You know, they get, as they get sicker, they get more distant from reality. Mm. And that separates them. And so I primarily work with parents that are dealing with a son or daughter that doesn't believe they're ill. They seemingly are in denial, but I'll tell you what that really is in a minute. And they are not medicated. So that's the work I do all day long, is working with parents to help their son or daughter see another reason to be medicated other than the illness. But the third reason, the significant reason that more than 50%, the majority of the people with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder suffer from an inability to be aware of their illness. Mm. It's not a lack of ability. It's a total inability. Their brain is broken due to their illness. And another symptom they have, they call it anosognosia. It's just a big word for meaning they have no awareness. And you can talk to them until you're blue in the face. And most people do, especially parents, but they cannot process that data. They cannot realize the fact that they're sick. And so you have more than half the people with those serious mental illnesses out there who can't know they're sick and are going to be very reluctant to be treated for an illness they don't have.
Sounds pretty hopeless for them, Bob. Why are you so different? What makes you keep taking your meds?
Yeah, well, one thing is I don't suffer from a lack of awareness. I do have awareness when I'm well. I lack awareness when I'm manic, meaning that I feel like I'm on top of the world. And I don't think I'm sick when I'm manic. But when I'm well, when I'm treated, I realize that I have bipolar disorder. These people that I'm talking about that suffer from unawareness don't even recognize they're sick, even when they're treated. Their brain just doesn't work. So fortunately, I don't have that other condition, that other symptom of anosognosia. And the other thing that keeps me treated is that I learned a long time ago, my doctor, when he first diagnosed me, he said, if you ever want to be with your kids again, because I was separated from them due to a terrible, terrible parenting, restraining, whole big mess that I had, he said that you better stay on your meds. That'll be your ticket to seeing your kids. And he was right. So I call my meds my kid meds. I don't call them psychiatric meds. I say, I got to take my kid meds tonight. Otherwise, I might not see the kids tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you doesn't help to have an accountability partner, somebody that you really trust, so that you give permission. Hey, when I'm manic, I must not be taking my meds. Would you confront me and show me this piece of paper where I gave you permission to hit me over the head with a baseball bat to get me to take my meds or something like that?
That's what
that
I
work
call it.
Or no?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely works. That's the baseball bat contract. You're right. And I have parents.
I had a name, huh?
I'm going to give it a name right now. That's a great contract. It's that baseball bat contract. And you do want to have somebody like that. You want to have a whole team of people, if you can, that you trust. You want to maybe have four or five or six people that can recognize when you're kind of going off the rails, and you want them to kind of approach you and say, hey, Bob, I notice that all of a sudden I can't get a word in edgewise. And I know that's one of the signs of bipolar mania is pressured speech. And so I'm wondering, now this is the key thing, Dave and Adrian, is the key thing is not to accuse them of not taking their meds. What I do instead is I might say to a friend of mine, if I see them exhibiting symptoms, I might say something like, you know what? I wonder if your meds are not working properly. Because if I say to them, I wonder if you're taking your meds and they're not, what are they going to tell me?
Not necessarily the truth.
Not the truth.
Don't have to ask them, are you taking your meds? You know they're not taking them because you see the symptoms.
You know one of two things for sure. They're either not taking them, or perhaps that's true that the meds are not working properly anymore, because that happens as well.
If somebody is living on their own and there's no one there to be accountable to, or to even recognize that they have a condition, I mean, what would be the warning signs of being bipolar or having a mental illness?
Yeah, well, some of the more dramatic warning signs would be that there'd be delusional thinking. You know, that person might show up at work and say, you know what, I can't use this computer anymore because the CIA is tapped into it, you know. Or they might say, you know, there are drones listening to me.
Right.
Or they may have things like in bipolar where they have what I just alluded to, pressured speech. Pressured speech is a real tell of bipolar disorder. That's the guy that you might have met that can't shut up. He just keeps going and going and going and going. And I call him uninterruptible. You can't interrupt him. Even when you try, he'll talk right over you. And if you get a word in edgewise, he'll run right over that. And I've been that guy, and I've talked where I've had three or four people in a room, and then I've watched them all walk out the door, and I'm still talking. You can't stop talking. That's a big sign of bipolar disorder mania.
I have a son. I have an ex. I'm not going to tell you who he is because he might be listening. But he is paranoid. He's, you know, the CIA is after him. And everywhere he goes, you know, people are watching him and this and that. And he is totally anti-mental illness. He's in total denial. He thinks we're crazy because we won't believe him. Is there hope for him? Or do we just have to live with this insanity for the rest of our life? Because, you know, he has to deal with my daughter, not my daughter because they got a divorce, but his daughter, which is my granddaughter. And, you know, he comes around all the time, and it's just like, you know, you got to walk on eggshells. What do we do, Bob?
Yeah. Yeah, with that person, and what I teach my parents and the people I coach is that, you know, you really need to build a relationship, you know, a relationship of trust where, you know, if you had a relationship of trust, you could go to him and say, you know what, I see some things that are just kind of off about you. You know, they just seem to be different than the rest of the world. And I wonder if it would be, you know, if you would consider doing me a favor and going to see a doctor or maybe getting treated for it.
Should we start with?
With a psychiatrist in these cases.
Yeah, the very name psychiatrist has such stigma to it. How do you deal with that?
I know. And I wish it didn't. I do know that general practitioners, great as they are, don't spend a lot of time studying psychiatric illnesses to the degree where they might recognize them. Like, for example, in my own life, I went to general practitioner many times about my anxiety, my mood swings and things like that. And they characterize it as having anxiety disorder, depression, and the like, but never was able to identify that it was bipolar disorder because they're not really well seasoned in that.
And only until recently did they even know what it was. I mean, I have another relative who had a father, you know, in the 30s. He was in Hollywood, and he was very manic depressant, which is what they called it at that time. And, you know, he lived a tortured life, and because nobody knows what it was. And apparently there were a lot of Hollywood people in that boat. Sure. Well, listen, we're coming to the end of the time together. Let's talk about your book. Why did you write it? What do you hope to accomplish? And how can people get it?
Well, I really wrote it because people, again, kept asking me to write a book about this story, about going 35 years untreated, undiagnosed. How's that even happened in this country? Is that possible? And yes, it is. And then is it possible that a guy like that, like your friend that you were alluding to, I was like him, very much like him. Can he get help? Can he get fixed? You know, can he have a life that he would consider worth living? And yes, I'm proof positive of that. And that's why I wrote the book. I really wanted people to know that even in somebody, in a case like the guy you described, the father of your grandchild, can live a really healthy life.
Will the book help? I mean, is it easy reading? It seems less threatening than saying, let's go visit a psychiatrist. Will this be a good first step?
This would be a great first step. Just share the book with him and say, you know, here's a book.
I got to go buy it.
You got to go buy it. Yeah. And you can buy that at any major store. I think bookstores. Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, sure.
What if he has anosognosia?
That's a good
guest
point.
Know what that word meant.
You asked the last guest a question.
He says, I don't know what that word means.
That's a big word, man. If he has anosognosia, I say, you know, I do workshops twice a month, 3-hour workshops, really addressing how to deal with that particular problem.
That's great.
And I would.
Where are you located?
I'm in Seattle. I do all my workshops on Zoom. If they went to bobkrulish.com, bobkrulish.com.
And how long are your workshops?
And the workshops are for 3 hours. And I really give them a program called LEAP, L-E-A-P, that was designed by a doctor that really figured out how to talk to somebody with anosognosia. His brother was suffering from it, Dr. Amador, and he wrote a great book about it, I'm Not Sick, I Don't Need Help, and was able to help his brother get treated. His brother had schizophrenia and never recognized the fact that he had schizophrenia, but through this method that Dr. Amador taught and learned, and now has taught me as one of his trainers, he was able to get his brother diagnosed and treated.
And okay, so one step at a time. The book would be a good first step. You talk about your workshops in the book, I assume.
Yes. No, I don't mention them in the book because I did the book before the workshops came about.
Okay, so a workshop would be a good second step if he gets through the book, right?
Workshops are a great step for a caregiver.
Oh, for a caregiver.
If you're a caregiver like
yourself.
But not
for him. Not for the...
Yeah, not necessarily for the person, right? Because they're really addressed to how in the world do I help?
How to deal with a loved one who is... And you're the caregiver. Well, yeah, you know, can you imagine someone with dementia who is also dealing with this, which I have another relative whose mother is an alcoholic, which has induced the dementia. And she has mental illness as well. And it's like, my gosh, you know, how do you keep from killing yourself, you know?
Oh, it's so sad, babe. That's hard. That's really hard.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, give me that website if someone wants to get a hold of you.
So Bob Krulish, BobKrulish.com. Go there. You'll get a free copy of the first chapter of my book if you go to my website. And you also go on the events tab and you can sign up for any one of my workshops that you see listed on the events tab. They're all free.
So I could even get, if I sign up for the workshop, it would give me some practical advice in my communication with him. Yes?
Yes.
Even though I'm not his caregiver.
Yes. It would definitely teach you a lot.
I would understand him more, better.
How to understand him and how to communicate with him more effectively.
And I can share that with, you know, his daughter, and maybe that will improve her communication with him.
And your daughter.
Absolutely.
Well, she tries not to talk to him. They're exes, you know.
Okay. So maybe not her.
But he had a daughter and a son. He has a daughter and a son, both of my grandkids. And the son just turned 18. The daughter's 22. So, I mean, you know, they're adults.
Yeah. Yeah, they're adults. And anybody who's trying to support a loved one with a mental illness where they're struggling with their loved one's ability to be treated or willingness to be treated would do well by attending the workshop. I give them a lot of great tips and techniques and skills on how to really effectively communicate with somebody like that.
Thanks again, Bob. And for everybody tuning in, I'm Caregiver Dave at caregiverdave.com. Our website's a membership site. And we've got lots of free gifts for you that will help you not just survive, but to thrive caregiving. And Adrian has a wonderful, wonderful website at thecaregiverspace.org. She's got chats, and it's a great, great place. Thank you again, Bob. Have a nice day.
Great to be with you both, Adrian. Dave, thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I'll get these links out to you, Bob, by the end of the day.
Okay, that's great, Dave. Thanks
Share them on your social media. Bye-bye.
I got a question. I know we're about...
For me or for Bob?
No, for both of you. You said that... You had a restraining order.
Yes.
You were motivated to take your medication to see your kids.
Yes.
I'm asking if Dave's daughter can
somehow that's a good idea.
Use that to motivate him to seek some help.
That would probably need to have an incident happen, you know, like an incident. Where they said, okay, that's the last straw. If you want to see, you know, as opposed to just doing it for no apparent reason, you know, quote unquote. But all you got to do is wait. There's always an incident happening.
There's an incident. Yeah, like for me, I was stalking my ex-wife.
Yeah.
When I was very sick. I was very, very sick. Mm-hmm. And so she took everybody away from me, my kids, herself.
Yeah. Well, it's a great idea, Adrian. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, bye, Bob.
Okay, bye-bye, guys.
We are a community of caregivers that understands and supports you wherever you are in your journey. We are a place to connect with other caregivers, but more importantly, a place to get practical, actionable help. There are lots of ways for you to get support. First of all, you can download our welcome pack. This will get you started on your Thrive journey. Next, you can ask and get answers to your questions by posting them here in our private Facebook groups. You can also get live online support by attending one of our live weekly Connect webinars. You can get practical, actionable advice by listening to our weekly podcast. You can hear and read other stories about other caregivers' experiences. Plus, add your own in our weekly Share Your Story forum, posted every Tuesday in the Facebook group. You can access essential resources and download practical Thrive Solutions Packs, all of which are geared to help you thrive as a caregiver. You get lifetime access to all of our resources. Again, we're here to support you and help you thrive and to enjoy your life as a caregiver. And remember, this is a place to get hope, not just cope.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Keep breathing, take it in and let it out. Keep breathing, it's gonna be okay. Believe in a power. Don't know what
Yeah.